All right, I'm going to call this morning's meeting to order. It is 10 a.m. on the nose, and with me today, I'm Commissioner Calkins from Port of Seattle in the Northwest Seaport Alliance, and with me today is Commissioner Don Johnson. We may have Commissioner Petrich join us later today if she's able to make it from another event she's attending on behalf of the port. So please stand as we recite the flag salute. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. First order of business is the approval of the minutes. Commissioner Johnson, do you have any changes to the minutes?
No, I'll move that we approve the minutes.
All right, and I guess I have to second those. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Approved. All right, do we have anyone here for public comment? If we do, you get a full hour if you want it. If you need it. All right. Okay, we're going to move right into general business, and we're starting with the State Auditor's Office. I know we have Joanne Klein, Gus Ramos, and Dave Smolko here to present.
Okay, thank you for having us. We're representing the State Auditor's Office, and we're here to present our entrance for the Seaport Accountability Audit. This is our audit manager, Joanne Klein. I'm Dave Smolko. I'm the lead. Gus Ramos is the assistant manager, and he couldn't be here today. Let's see.
Is this one here?
Okay. So today we will briefly go over information about our office, our accountability plan, and our review of other auditors' work, the planned report publication date, and our concluding remarks. Pat McCarthy is our state auditor, and her vision is increased trust in government, and our mission is to provide citizens with independent and transparent examinations of how state and local governments use public funds. The work of other auditors. Our audit includes a review of the financial and single audit work that's completed by RSM. The auditor's office is obligated by statute to perform financial audits of state agencies and local governments. And if the port contracts with another CPA firm to perform that audit, we still must issue an opinion on fair presentation. And to do that, we need to review the work of RSM. We will also evaluate and consider their work for purposes of leveraging or not duplicating something they have done that might impact the accountability audit. So our overall accountability plan will include these areas listed here for NWSA. And that's contracts. We plan to look at large public works contracts and architects and engineering for compliance with competitive bidding. Payroll, we're looking at policies and procedures, support for employee pay. Wharf revenue, we're looking at controls over collection and support for amounts that are collected. For purchase cards, we look at controls over review and generally that cards are used appropriately for Seaport Alliance business. Related party transactions, we primarily plan to look at distribution of profit and loss to the ports of Tacoma and the Port of Seattle and how they're calculated. And for the clean truck program, we will review that money is lended for the appropriate reasons in relation to the clean air program. Our planned report publication will be in late December. It's kind of a target date, but that's what we hope to shoot for. And the report will be available when it's released on that website. And in general, in concluding, our office is committed to protecting the port's confidential or sensitive information, as always. Our estimated audit cost based on our current billing rate and budgeted hours is $31,000 for the accountability audit. Darren is our liaison. Any communications we have will be with him on progress of the audit and any audit issues that we may have during the audit. And the last slide is all the contacts of upper management. Would you want to?
So if there's ever any questions, you can feel free to call us. It doesn't have to be during the audit time. It can be any time of the year, and we try to help.
That's one of the big benefits an audit group provides, because you can deal with issues real time versus a history report, which benefits nobody.
Yeah, we try our best. That's why our goal is to have this 2018 audit done by December.
Appreciate that.
So it covers the calendar year 2018?
It does.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, I don't have any further questions.
I don't know. This is my last, we have one more today, but this is my last day as on the audit, because I'm retiring in December. So I just want to take the time out and thank you guys for doing a great job and being not a cop, but really a help for the Port of for the Northwest Seaport Alliance as well as the Port of Tacoma. So I appreciate it very much.
Thank you.
And I appreciate State Auditor McCarthy's vision. I like that, building trust in government generally. I think if we do our jobs well, then that will result. So thank you. Thanks for your time.
Thank you.
And with that, can I call up Lisa Wilson and Kayla Lipson?
Good morning.
Good morning.
Thank you for having us here today. I'm Lisa Wilson. I'm the audit partner on the Northwest Seaport Alliance, and Kayla Lipson is the in charge. So we have a few things that we'll walk you through today and answer any questions you have.
Great.
Go ahead, Kayla.
So this first slide is just kind of an outline of our scope of work. So we have to form an opinion of the fairness and presentation of the Northwest Seaport Alliance's financial statements in accordance with government auditing standards. In addition to that, we also form an opinion on internal control over financial reporting in accordance with government auditing standard or accounting standards. We have to form an opinion on the compliance for the Alliance's major federal programs, so over the schedule of expenditures of federal awards, and they will have a single audit this year. We will also issue a management letter with recommendations related to the port's control environment. So as of today, we have gone through our planning and risk assessment, as well as the assessment of internal controls. We will be doing our substantive audit procedures in late February, early March of 2020, and we will issue the audit early April, and our final presentation will be at the spring meeting.
Great.
Now, during this process, even though the final report isn't due until the spring, if you encounter something that's particularly concerning, you would immediately bring it to us, presumably?
That is correct.
Yes.
Okay.
Yep.
Thanks.
So for the planning and risk assessment, it involves our analysis of risk of material misstatement in the financial statements. The audit is designed to provide reasonable but not absolute assurance that the financial statements are free of any material misstatements. The audit risk model is assessed at a high, medium, or low based on inherent risk, control risk, and detection risk. The audit scope and approach are determined based on our results of risk assessment.
And just to give you a little more flavor, those risk assessments include our experience in prior audits, things that we are aware of that perhaps changed in operations this year, discussions with management, and things that we maybe identified during that initial planning process. So
that's probably an important comment considering next year's changes, right?
Correct.
Yes.
Yeah. Yep.
We, as a part of this risk assessment, we develop a materiality. This is the maximum level of misstatement that can be tolerated in the financial statements without causing a reasonable person's judgment to significantly change or be influenced. The determination considerations are both qualitative and quantitative. They involve expectations of readers of the financial statements, critical components of the users of financial statements are analyzed, benchmark percentages are calculated. This threshold is determined for purposes of proposing adjusting journal entries. For our evaluation of internal controls, it's designed to provide reasonable assurance regarding the achievement of defined objectives, the effectiveness and efficiency of operations, reliability of the financial reporting, compliance with applicable laws and regulations. And we base this off of the five components of internal control, which is the control environment, risk assessment, control activities, information and communication, and monitoring. Our approach to internal control, understanding, and assessment is a top-down approach. So this is assessing the entity-level controls and information technology, so their general computer controls, identifying significant accounts and processes, obtaining the understanding of those significant accounts and processes, and walking through those controls, identifying any internal deficiencies and communicating those. So some significant accounts and processes that we walk through are the billing, cash receipts, so your revenue and AR, procurement, cash disbursements, so your payables, lease transactions, payroll, capital projects, treasury and investments, the financial close and reporting, IT, so information technology with your general computer controls, and the expenditures or federal awards.
How standard is this list across various organizations? Is there anything that's not on this list that you would do for a different organization?
Oh,
that's not on this list?
Yeah, there are lots of things that are not on this list that would be relevant to another organization. For example, inventory is not a significant account to the Alliance where it might be somewhere else. We don't really list debt here, right? Because there's no debt on the Alliance where, for example, on the port, debt would be a significant account balance for us. Okay. But there are also things on here that probably are not significant to some of our other clients. We don't necessarily always say that lease transactions are significant at other clients. So it really is tailored toward the significant activity within the Alliance.
Okay.
Does that answer your question? Or?
Yeah.
Okay. So the next couple of slides are, there's always new accounting standards that are being prepared and implemented, and there's a couple of new standards that are coming down this year and into next year. So the first one is related to fiduciary activities as it relates to accounting and potentially additional footnote disclosures. I'm not anticipating that GASB 84 will have a significant impact on the Alliance because there's not a lot of fiduciary type activities, but the management is actually reviewing that and making their assessment right now. Additionally, GASB 90 is applicable this year, and it relates to equity interests. Again, I'm not anticipating that this will have a significant impact on the Alliance as well. The next one, which is actually applicable in 2020, is related to leases. So this standard actually entirely changes the model for accounting for leases. And results in the lessor recognizing a receivable and a deferred inflow of resources, and the lessee, so recognizing the other side of that, so the liability. So essentially what this standard does, if you're familiar with what normal footnote disclosure is on leases, typically operating leases would be disclosed in the footnotes and not on the balance sheet. This puts everything on the balance sheet. So with the intent of having more transparency into the costs associated with leasing transactions. So fairly significant new standard, not only to this entity, but to many entities. And there's a similar standard in the non-governmental world as well. It's going to significantly change how balance sheets look, because if you're the lessee side of it and you have a lot of leases, you're going to recognize a liability. So it's going to significantly change how the balance sheet looks. The Alliance accounting team has been evaluating this fairly significantly over the last year, so they'll be ready to roll come 2020.
So we've spoken a lot about that in our budgeting conversations mm-hmm. as well.
Sure.
And there's been a lot of discussion of the what, but not necessarily the why. Do you have a sense of why they've made this change?
Yeah, that's a really good question. And you know, this standard on the FASB side, so the non-governmental side, has been in discussion for much longer than actually the GASB similar component to this. And if I had to venture a guess, this really goes back to probably the Enron days, truthfully, when there were a lot of off-balance sheet type transactions going on and lack of transparency in the financial statements. Word on the street is that's really where the FASB side of that started, and FASB and GASB tend to eventually sort of mirror each other where it's appropriate. So I don't want to say that GASB didn't have their own reasons that I'm perhaps just not aware of, but I think that when one goes, the other one sort of follows suits eventually.
Okay, that helps.
Yep. That was it. Any other questions for us?
A couple of questions.
Sure.
So returning to slide 7, where you do have that list. Yes, that one.
Okay.
Is there an audit of insurance and risk management generally ever performed?
You know, we don't specifically, we do look at risk management and the insurance related liabilities as a part of our audit. I wouldn't necessarily call that a significant account for the port. But we don't necessarily, we certainly don't do a separate audit of that. If there's concerns over that particular area, we can certainly ingrain that into our audit approach and would be happy to do so. But it's we typically have not done, other than kind of normal procedures over that area.
I raise it in the context of ever-increasing sort of global weirdness where, you know, we have California wildfires into November that are really risking infrastructure.
Yeah.
And as representatives of a significant piece of infrastructure in our region, I want to make sure that we're...
That the coverage is appropriate.
Yeah, that we've got what we need to make sure that we can get up and running again quickly and aren't bankrupted by that. But I don't know, Don, if you have any thoughts on that.
No, having a risk discussion is always a risky thing in itself because you can't guarantee anything in life.
No.
And you could dig your hole so deep you'd never get out of it. I mean, your biggest, you could spend all your money on insurance. Something might happen someday. So it has to have a reasonable discussion. What is a reasonable amount of risk? And because I can fear myself to death. You know, I can fear everything. And nobody, it's like suing the electrical companies in California. Those prices are going to come back in power rates. It's like suing the drug companies for the opiate crisis. Well, that cost is going to come back in on drug prices. Nobody's going to take it out of their hip pocket and pay it. So we have to have some reality about reasonable risk when the most dangerous thing we do in our lives is get in our car, in my opinion. So it's an interesting discussion, but we need to be very careful and very professional in how we handle that discussion.
Well, we are more than happy to kind of broaden our procedures in that area and provide a report out when we come back.
We might just review what we currently have.
And I may just task Kurt with providing a little bit of feedback on how, you know, it may not necessarily be an audit function, but it may just be an internal accounting function. We look at that and consider whether we've got sufficient or too much.
Yeah,
or
at least a review.
Yeah.
I don't remember the last time we talked about that.
And then my other question is, and forgive me, I don't come to this position with a history in accounting or
That's
auditing,
okay.
But there seems to be this phenomenon in auditing where there's almost like a break-even point where as you devote more resources to auditing, you actually claw back significant foregone revenue because of bad processes or failure to follow up, whatever it might be. And so I'm always interested in, you know, wanting to maximize revenue. If it means we need to spend a little bit more to ensure that we're getting all that, is, from your sense, are we putting enough resources to this? Or, you know, are we past that point?
Yep.
Where are we on that spectrum?
Yeah, that's a good question. Let me make sure I'm understanding what you're asking. So is the size of the team the right size to be efficient and make sure nothing's left on the table?
To pay for itself and then some, because of its effectiveness at catching.
Yeah, that's a good question. It's probably a little hard for me to give a fully vetted answer only because I don't live in their world. From our view, I can tell you the fact that they're prepared. We very rarely have audit adjustments or errors that we find in our accounting records. And the quality of what we get is very high. That tells me you have the right size team. And they're prepared when they agreed that they're going to be prepared. Very rarely do things slide. So that tells me that the size of your team is correct. Now, is it big enough to generate more on the upside? I'm not sure I can speak to that, and I'm not sure the Alliance is quite far enough along in the change of the processes between the two home ports. You know, they integrated the billing this year fully into the South Harbor. So I think that takes a little time to sort of get that engine up and running, that you probably are another year away from going, okay, is it really the right team? Do we need to still add? I think you're still in that kind of growing process. But just based on the fact that of the high quality of the work that we see coming out of this team, I think you've got the right size team today.
Yeah, and I think that's, to follow up, I think that's more of a business discussion than an audit discussion.
Agreed, but I can tell you from our perspective, because
if things were lagging,
or that there were errors in accounting records on a regular basis, that would tell me they're probably stretched.
Yeah, I would just say it just a little bit differently than that. The stress is a function of people's personality, from my opinion, having run a business. And if you start to find problems, it's time to start looking at the senior management team, because you shouldn't find problems from year to year.
If it's consistent, I would agree with that.
Yeah, and because that's, if you find that things aren't being billed properly or two or three years in a row, it's time to make a change at the top. And that might not be a CEO, it might be a department head.
Right.
You know, whoever's got that expertise level, because we shouldn't, the fact that we have clean audits should be an expectation and not an exception. We should rarely have an audit that's not clean. We can have an issue from time to time.
That's going to happen.
Need to fix it right away and not have it linger. So.
Yep, agree.
Appreciate your work.
Yep.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
All right, next item is Terminal 4 construction audit, and I believe we have a representative from Moss Adams here. Is that you, Steve?
Oh, that's good. That's a big, did you get a chance to look at that? That's a good job.
So I'd like to do a quick introduction.
Please, thank you.
To this audit. So as some background, the charter provides for discretionary audits in addition to the required financial and the state auditor's audits that you heard about earlier today. The audit committee, when we last met, actually this was in December, selected Terminal 4 for a construction audit. And the objectives of this audit were to assess and confirm the internal policies and procedures and practices surrounding project delivery, make sure that they were in place and functioning as designed. So the other major objective is, as we move towards the construction of T5, we were hoping to use any learnings from this audit and apply that to the new T5 project. So last time we met, we spoke to you about going out and procuring a auditor to help us with this project, and we did. We procured a contract with Moss Adams, and they through the summer worked on this project, and they're here to present the results today. I think you will be pleased, as we are, with the results of this audit. The Pier 4 project spending for this particular project was about $118 million, and the auditors looked at approximately $90 million worth of that spending. So they did a pretty comprehensive job of reviewing this project. I would like to congratulate and thank the project delivery team for the work that they have done on this audit, because as you will hear later, there aren't any significant deficiencies. And specifically, I'd like to thank Trevor Thornsley, the project manager on this job, for the job that he did, and also for having all of the materials readily available for the auditors to review. So thank you. And I'll turn it over to Moss Adams and Stephen Bichetti.
Thank you. Thank you so much. And please note for the record that Commissioner Petrich has arrived as well.
Thank you very much. I do apologize for being late, but it was a conference and a speech that couldn't be avoided.
Well, the timing was good for us.
Thank you. Great for me, too.
So, good morning. I'm Mark Strank. I'm a partner with Moss Adams within our consulting division. I oversee a variety of services, which includes the work that Steve leads for the firm, which are construction advisory and construction audit practices. So thanks for the opportunity to perform this work and share the results with you. Appreciated that we had participation from both ports in the process and gaining input, and certainly appreciated the work that Darren and Trevor did in helping us navigate and gather all the information. So in essence, you're going to hear the results of what would say essentially a no exceptions report with one sort of minor technicality, which Steve will touch on. But we do a lot of this work, and so you might say, geez, if there's no exceptions, why is there all this information in this report? So our job is to provide value back to you to help you do what you do better tomorrow than you do it today. And so what you have in essence is a series of observations, recommendations, just about how to implement additional best practices. Lots of good stuff going on here. Because we do a lot of this, we sort of draw from the other organizations that we work with, and to give you ideas for up-leveling how you do what you do. And so I think with that, I'll turn it over to Steve to walk you through what we did, how we did it, and the results. So thank you.
Good morning, everyone. Good morning. My name is Steve Bichetti. I'm a senior manager, as Mark stated, in our business consulting group focusing on construction advisory services. That means three things. We do all ranking in terms of size and activity. We do capital program assessments, which we perform here. We do cost compliance reviews on contracts. And then we also do contract review. We do so many of the contract reviews. We also do cost compliance reviews. We also do reviews in conjunction with your legal department to making sure that you guys have contract terms that are favorable for the owner. So we did a capital program review on the Pier 4 project. And we worked with Northwest and Project Management to develop improvement recommendations to help support your success on future projects, which would be the Pier 5 projects. We utilized GFOA, which is best practice in terms of reporting type findings. And then we leveraged the home ports pulse procedures as our criteria to evaluate the operational efficiencies and effectiveness. And as Mark noted, the port complied with the home ports policies procedures, which is huge. We do a lot of these projects, and a lot of them are public, and you'll see most of our reports or all of them have lots of exceptions. So this is kind of an out of my zone type presentation, because there's not much to present on, given you guys had great documentation. The team was very timely with all the documentation that they provided. There was no major deviations from what we would expect in terms of best practice. So,
great. Is there any particular government agency you want to shame today that is really bad at? No, I'm kidding. I'm kidding. You don't know. No name calling. Just praise.
It's my last term, so I should say that.
just knowing that you're ahead of the curve should be enough.
That's enough. Yeah. That's enough.
There you go.
Yeah, I'd be happy to, but that.
Offline.
Yeah. Yeah. A little bit extra for that.
Yeah.
Okay, so our major areas that we reviewed were managing members' oversight compliance with a couple objectives, expenditure and procurement management and controls with a couple of objectives within there, and then budgetary reporting and management controls, which is one of my favorite areas to review. So we dug into that, gave you guys some criteria that we like to leverage and for your consideration, but overall you guys had most of the KPIs that are in line with best practices, and the ones that weren't there you could calculate based off the information that was provided. So overall it was really good to see that. Okay, so we started on-site field work in August. It was awesome coming here, seeing the facility. We actually got a tour from Trevor, which was really cool for our team to check it out. And then
I think we got a text from Steve when he was up in one of the cranes, and I'll tell you, that comfortable.
Yeah. So I take calls everywhere, and this is the only time where I literally missed the call because I was scared to put my hands.
I was like, what's he talking about? Yeah. Anyway. We needed a picture. That's what we really need. Yeah.
Okay. So, and then we delivered the report in September, and we are here in October to report on our results.
Great.
And before we get into the high-level areas that are recommendations, the best practices observed, we like to spend a couple minutes on this. Again, we based off our experience and working with Trevor and Darren, we think you guys have a great staff that are very knowledgeable about construction and the accounting and reporting around construction. The project appeared to be exactly what you guys were looking for. So everyone's highly experienced, was very timely and a pleasure to work with. We also noted that you guys consistently reported the project status to managing members in line with the criteria that was established. We also noted, which we touched on earlier, that you guys complied with the home ports policy procedures. Okay, so this is the overall findings. The report has more of the detail that you guys can dig into over a cup of coffee or two, probably maybe three, but we have assigned the risk levels based off our experience on where we see risk areas, not necessarily what is existing here, where these are the types of components that we could see happening potentially to pay focus, special attention to it. So the first one was within the managing members' oversight compliance, developing a communication strategy and plan. We find often this is a overlooked area for a lot of clients where no one knows what's going on. You have to go to 14 different links to figure out where to go. Here you guys utilize Facebook, Twitter, Northwest Seaport Alliance website. There wasn't a specific communication plan developed for Pier 4, but for Pier 5 there is one. And our recommendation here is developing a communication plan with the strategic people within the group, accounting, engineering, public relations. If you just have accounting people, you're gonna get a different message. So making sure that you have the right people in the room with the right message, timely, consistent across the channel so that everyone's getting updated accordingly, which we assigned as medium. We've seen that be an issue. We didn't see it be an issue here, but
part of the problem sometimes there's no obligation for anybody to remember what they've been told either.
Yep.
Yep. So that creates that, from my experience, that creates a huge gap sometimes, but that's just life itself.
Yep, exactly. Number two, establish independent Northwest or Alliance policy procedures. Again, our criteria was the home port policy procedures, and this is an area where you guys have two different entities that have different policy procedures. When we did the meeting with the both commissioners, it was evident on our side that there are different procedures for each of the ports. So what we would recommend is, in line with best practices, is not accounting policy procedures. Everyone does their own accounting function, but for these types of joint projects to consider implementing specific policy procedures for the construction operations in terms of like who authorizes what in terms of role. What are the, and I'll line up number 3B with this, is defining the contract types and construction delivery methodologies for a specific project, et cetera. So having those high level construction specific discussions and policies for guidance, I think would be helpful in preventing any disconnects in terms of the two ports policy procedures. So that was 3B, and this was actually brought up from the at the commissioner meeting, which I was pleased with. Again, all the contracts that we reviewed were authorized per policy procedures at the right level. An area that a lot of entities don't have is they define the different contract delivery or contract types that are most appropriate for that specific project. You guys picked the right project delivery type that I would expect, but I've come across too many instances where they will do a project that you would expect would be design, build, GMP. They do lump sum, which is potentially not favorable for the owner. So having those types of discussions now and formalized would prevent future types of issues like that where you get the wrong contract type that's not favorable for you.
Especially as the Northwest Seaport Alliance matures, because this project started about the same time the Northwest Seaport started, so I agree with that 100%.
Okay, 2A and 5B, evaluate the key performance indicators, policy procedures. So again, you guys complied and provided the exact information that the master delegation required. Some of the things that were not on there that are in line with GFOA, which is best practice, was percent complete, which you could calculate, percent of budget expended, which you could calculate, contract status, including time, which was not there, in cash flow, since you guys are getting funding from different sources, making sure that you guys have secured funding with cash flow considerations, I think is critical. The next one, 5C, which is the project changes, you guys did get authorization by the managing members for the authorized amounts, which is per the delegation. Change orders are just naturally a risky area. And we would recommend that right now the annual or the semi-annual quarterly reports have a summary of the change orders. Trevor and the project management team have all the change orders in detail. It's all there. I asked for it, and he shot an email about 20 seconds later with all the information. So that might be too much information for the managing members. So maybe somewhere in between where you have certain change orders over a certain threshold defined on what it is may not be a bad idea.
I think that's worth a discussion, because change orders are change orders, and some are small. And my concern is because as management members, not many have experience of doing major projects. So one needs to learn not to be too excited on some issues, but yet get excited on some issues.
Yep.
And so we might want to even increase the frequency of the change order, because every line item is going to come. Some line items are going to come higher, and some line items are going to come lower, just the way that is.
Can you give an example of a change order that you think? I mean, I'm imagining, you know, that a particular material was specified in the original contract, and then for a variety of reasons, it's decided that a different material and the total cost of that material might be $1 million, which would trigger, you know, by delegation, if we were simply putting it at 300,000, and yet, you know, is that a managing member? Is it worth the time of the managing members to oversee that kind of thing? I guess give me a good example of where you think it would be useful.
So based off my experience, construction needs to happen when it needs to happen. If you guys require the authorization to go through that whole process, the project's operations are going to get likely disrupted. So this is more of a reporting function. They stayed within the authorized amounts. And what we're recommending here, which is in line with best practices, is the under the thresholds, the change order. You guys actually had not a lot of change orders for the size of the projects, which was great. But maybe having the discussion on what types of changes within the authorization amounts should be reported, what level of detail. I don't know if you guys want the proposed change order numbers and all that stuff, but maybe over a certain threshold. Certain types, unforeseen conditions are always going to happen, but I think it's not a bad metric to add in terms of the detail versus the summary.
Yeah, I think it's nice to know what the changes are, but not stop the construction process, because that helps educate the managing members also. And we don't need a long list, but we need, you know, what are some of the important changes?
Yep.
And then why? Because the engineers are going to call those shots.
Great. Kurt, that may be something for us to consider in the, forgetting the name of that other.
Master policy.
Yes, exactly. We've got another committee ad hoc right now that is working on some of these questions, so I think we can add that to the agenda for, and to be clear, it would be an adjustment to what needs to be reported, not necessarily what needs to be approved after the fact.
Yep, correct.
And I can imagine that being a good system for, if all of a sudden we're getting regular reports of significant changes, that might be a time for the managing members to step in and say, all right, we need a more comprehensive review. Why are there so many changes happening so consistently? So, yeah, okay, thank you.
And then number six, which it's implement ROI financial analysis policy procedures. For this one, this was stemmed that the ROI financial analysis was performed in the beginning. It's readily available to be delivered at the end. When we asked for it, they gave it to us. It just wasn't submitted to the managing members because they are going to do it at the on an annual basis at the end. So I think it's coming based off management responses quarter 44. Darren, is that correct?
It's 44.
Okay, so it's ready to go. We noted in the report because we're auditors and that's what we do, but it sounds like it's on its way. And that concludes okay. Our presentation. We have more detail after that, but I figured we'd keep it high level and just have the discussion like we did versus go through a lot of words.
Yeah, appreciate that. Yep. Thank you so much.
I did pour over this, and because it's one of my real heartthrobs.
It's exhilarating, right?
It is. I find it to be. Because in my old company, you were successful, you were looking for a new job. There was no forgiveness. So I thought you did a great job in doing this and made some comments that were very insightful as we go forward, because it's a complex subject. But I think performance audits are, we get annual accounting audits, and I think doing performance audits, voluntary performance audits, are helpful and keep you clean. You don't have to do it every year, but find a project. Even if it doesn't always have to be a big project either. It can be a $20 million project. Well, let's just go through this and see if we're still keeping our processes in order. I think it's a good plan. I think you guys did a great job. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Yeah.
Thank you, Steve.
It's important for all of our managing members to have the opportunity to read these too. Thanks.
Okay,
thank you so much. And for our final business item, we have Darren Arakaki and Don Kelly presenting the lease accounting standard update.
Thank you, commissioners. So we've been talking about the new lease standard for quite some time now, and it's finally here. You all had a preview during the budget presentation. So we're here today, actually Don is here today to present actually what the financial statements will look like after the adoption of this new standard. And I think Lisa Wilson did a really good job in introducing the topic, so I don't have to do that, but I would like you to keep one couple things in mind. The new lease accounting standard is based on a foundational principle that leases are financing transactions. So if you think about it that way, I think the presentation will make a lot of sense. The other important, I think, definition is that the GASB defined leases as a contract that conveys control of the right to use an asset, so a property or whatever we're leasing. So if we keep those 2 points in mind, I think it'll help with the discussion. So we have worked pretty hard on understanding the standard and preparing for January 1st when it goes into effect. Don and his team have done a lot of work beginning about a year ago in working to understand the standard and also to review all of the leases for the South Harbor and now the North Harbor leases that we have assumed for the Northwest Seaport Alliance. So I believe that would be in excess of about 125 leases. We have been searching for a system to help us manage all of these leases, because really what happens is we need to create amortization tables for all of these leases, because they're like loans, financing transactions. We have been working with our vendor Yardi that we use for our lease management system, and they are close to a solution. But we're not there yet. Don and his team is going to begin testing it. But Don has done a lot of work in creating an Excel model that handles all of the Northwest Seaport Alliance leases, and that's what was used for the budget presentation. So I just want to take this opportunity to thank Don and his team for the tremendous effort that they've put forth to get us to where we are today. So with that, turning over to Don.
Okay, thank you, Darren. So timing being what it is, Lisa Wilson sort of introduced GASB 87 and what it is in terms of what the standard requires. So I won't get into a lot of detail on that, and this will be fairly brief. The idea here was really just to give you some context around what does it mean to us specifically, to our organization. So high level, what is GASB 87? It's the new lease accounting standard. You've heard that. It becomes effective for us as of 2020, so next year, not this year's audit, but the following. As Darren mentioned, it changes the way we will account for certain lease revenues and expenses, and really it impacts the presentation of the financial statements. And we've underlined presentation there because what's really important, there's no net P&L effect for this. There's no net joint venture income effect, no effect on taxability or timing of payments. Bond income covenants are still fine, and it doesn't impact the bond income calculation that the alliance is required to earn. Doesn't affect total cash inflows and outflows. Where there is a little bit of an impact is on the classification of cash flows, and we'll talk about that a little later and what to do about it. And why that's important is because classification of cash flows is what drives the distributable cash calculation, and that's based on the charter. So with that, we'll just very quickly look at the specific financial statements and what they'll look like. And this is for illustrative purposes only. What we've done here is we've taken the 2018 results. That's the far left column, just the way they were presented and audited. Then we have a couple of columns in the middle to represent the changes that will be effective for implementation of the GASB standard. One for the transactions where we are the lessor, we're leasing to someone, and one for the transactions where we're the lessee, leasing from someone. And then the far right-hand column is the final result. And so what you can see there, this is the balance sheet, this first statement of net position, also called balance sheet. And as Elisa alluded to, this statement requires us to put leases on the balance sheet. This is really where the impact is the biggest, because we're primarily a lessor in terms of what we do as a business. Our balance sheet as of 2018 on the asset side was about $342 million. We would, as of today, the estimate, given the leases in place today, we'd be adding about $1.1 billion to our balance sheet on the asset side, and then as a deferred inflow on the other side. So that's pretty significant.
So it, forgive my lay question here, sure, but that's essentially the sum total of all cash we ever expect to receive on all signed leases.
It's the present value.
Okay.
Yeah.
Great.
And then that gets amortized over the lives of the leases, as you'd imagine. So that's really where the biggest change is, and it just hits both sides. It just is big, so we wanted to make you aware of it. So we move on to the income statement. David talked about this a little bit in the budget presentation. Again, bottom line income statement doesn't change. What changes is the classification of some of those revenues. David said, you know, think about this like a mortgage, and I think that's a pretty good way to think about it. When you pay your mortgage payment, a portion of that goes to principal, a portion goes to interest. And so we're going to be required to record those revenues that same way. A portion of the payments we receive on our rent is going to be considered interest, a portion considered principal. And the interest portion would be presented as non-operating revenue, not as operating revenue. So we're used to looking at operating revenues as our metric. If we do that year over year, we're gonna see a big change, and it could be alarming. But so just understand it's really just a presentation change. We're not losing revenue. Nothing really changes in the business except the way we are required to present it now. And then finally, the cash flow statement. And here's where we have a little bit of a change that impacts us. Because presentation of cash flows defines operating cash and other cash based on how you earn the money. With the change in presentation on the income statement of the interest portion, that changes the way we're going to record the interest portion for the cash flows. And why that's important is the charter requires or says that distributable cash is based on the GAAP definition of operating cash flows. Well, the GAAP definition is changing. So in order for us to continue distributing the proper amount of cash back to the home ports, we got to do something about that. And
that's on next month's agenda, I think.
Yeah, there's going to be an interim solution proposed, and then ultimately there will probably be a charter change that staff will bring. But just that's why the change in the cash flow is important. Ultimately, cash is the same. What did we do there?
So the impact, if we've made no change, would be less cash distributed to the home ports?
No, if we made no change, more cash distributed to the home ports. But the change reduces the amount of cash that's classified as operating cash flow, and so therefore reduces the amount of cash available to distribute. So that's the three basic financial statements and the changes you'll see. Again, in summary, really doesn't affect anything for us as far as P&L, joint venture income, taxability, timing, bond covenants, all that sort of stuff. The only real issue besides how it's going to look is we have to address the distributable cash, and we have a plan to do that. Okay. So that's okay for our organization, what we can expect from GASB 87.
So I guess I'd like to add one more thing, just because, you know, this is the Northwest Seaport Alliance. So we have worked very closely with the Port of Seattle's accounting team, and, you know, we appreciate their input. We've worked pretty hard, and we're pretty much in lockstep in our understanding and our adoption, the way we're going to adopt the standard, the implementation. So, again, I just wanted to make sure you're aware that we are working together, and we do work together on a lot of these new accounting standards that come up.
I think one of the problems we'll face, but I'm not going to face it, as we don't do necessarily do we don't do monthly financials. We do quarterly sometimes, or semi-annual. But we all get monthly financial reports. We get a P&L and a balance sheet. One of the things we might be careful of, for the people who really look at those things, is they're going to look different, and they're going to forget the discussion we are now having. So it might be important to have a sample sheet over the next few months, just a blank sample sheet to show where the number was and where it's going, so people know how to look and not start. And it might minimize your phone calls. So, because it will look different when you see these big gaps, and especially on the P&L, because it shifts down. You might just figure out a way to communicate that so you don't to remind people, because they don't eat and live accounting all the time.
Yeah, thank you. That's great input. And internally, we have been discussing presenting the financial statements so that it is comparable to the prior year. So one of the options or the alternatives we've looked at was to move the interest portion up on top with revenue, just show it as a separate line, so we can show that, you know, revenue is comparable over the prior year. So we have some ways that we can do that. It won't be the same presentation as the year-end financial GAAP presentation, but for internal reporting, yes, we have those options.
Great, thank you.
And I suppose that David and Dan at the ports will want to make sure that the management note or the executive summary of each budget clarify. There's a portion of each of those that includes a discussion of why this looks different, but, you know, the bottom line is the same. All right. Commissioners, any further questions on that presentation?
No.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. And Don, thank you for all the work you've done on this. I am picturing going through an Excel spreadsheet with 120 some leases. That has got to be tedious work. But we sincerely appreciate it.
Thank you.
All right. With that, I'm going to open it up for some commissioner comment. Commissioners, any comments?
Thank you.
Thank you. Did a great job. This is our last session, and we'll thank him again later on. But it's been a joy. We've on this issue, I wasn't looking forward to these issues, as some of the people in the audience might recall. It's turned out to be appears to be less troublesome than originally thought. Because three years ago, it was, you got to be kidding me. So I'm glad it's turned out like it has, and it shouldn't impact us at all. Or very small amount. So thank you very much.
Anything, Commissioner Peck?
Just thank you for your leadership, and thank you for making it happen in such a seamless way.
And I'll conclude with just a big thank you to the two of you.
I know, my gosh,
you have served for many years on the Port
of
68.
on the audit committee, but also just more. We're going to be doing this series of sort of farewells and thank yous, but our communities are so grateful for the public service you two have provided. And for me, as still a relatively new commissioner, I have learned so much from the two of you, not least of which is how you carry yourself with such grace in our community. So thank you all. And I also want to say, on a personal note, it is Halloween today, and as a parent of three children, it's a really, really fun day. My son today went to school, and it was I was bursting with pride. He went as a Port of Seattle construction worker.
He's got fantastic
full gear.
And
as someone who's a huge advocate for the trades, I was bursting. But so please have a Halloween cookie on your way out the door.
Please.
And have a safe and happy Halloween night. Yes, Darren.
Yeah, may I have
Yeah.
make one last comment.
So of course.
I want to thank Commissioner Johnson for his leadership as president of the Port of Tacoma Commission, and also serving on the Northwest Seaport Alliance Commission Audit Committee for almost 10 years now, I think, is when we first had a Port of Tacoma Audit Committee. So I appreciate your leadership throughout the years, and I wish you good luck on your retirement.
Thank you. It was an easy job because you guys did a great job. So thank you very much.
Well, I want to thank him, too.
All right, and with that, we are adjourned at 10:56.
We have a...